I guess I am on again. I want to talk about issues of human nature. You just heard Tara DeMonte of Amnesty International. We discussed the surprising, though not so surprising, survey finding that 71% of U.S. North Americans would welcome more refugees and think the U.S. should do much more for refugees. That's not surprising, though, when you think about the generosity and decency and fellow feeling of most people. Reading about the survey and then preparing the interview with Tara DeMonte, I began thinking about other, quote, surprising findings that contradict the conventional wisdom on human nature, which is that the species is basically selfish, competitive, at best tribal, and unsympathetic and indeed fearful of strangers, that we resort to violence, war, and murder when our interests are challenged. And in this view, the only way to control and minimize that behavior is strict laws, police, quick and sure punishment, and constant teachings of lessons about when violence is wrong and when it is right, of course. And this dismal view is then promoted and confirmed in the theories of evolutionary biologists and especially, the worst of them, establishment economists. But this dismal view of, quote, human nature is contradicted by a great deal of evidence, an immense amount of evidence. In fact, most people are never violent. Many societies never go to war. Many early societies have deep cultural demands and values to welcome and assist strangers and travelers. Tens of thousands of people risk their lives to save Jews and gypsies and gays and communists from the death camps during Second World War. People willingly suffer pain for others when they register to donate bone marrow for leukemia patients unknown to them, for example. And there are popular websites where volunteers donate one of their kidneys for transplantation into a stranger. Less spectacular, but perhaps even more important for our coexistence, are the innumerable situations in daily life that do not conform to the image of the always egocentric human race. Why, for example, and these are just small examples, do we leave a tip even when we know we will never return to the restaurant? Why do we rush to stop a child we see running into the streets? It's difficult to see the advantage of caring for a bedridden relative for years or giving an anonymous donation to help earthquake victims we don't know or volunteering our precious time for a good cause, as more than 70 million Americans do each week. Another example, I've always been struck by studies of giving to the poor, particularly face-to-face when asked for help. Poor people, much more often than the rich, give help when requested. There, but for the grace of God, go I. As to the well-to-do, they hardly ever give, and in fact ignore those requests. One final example, the behavior of people in crisis when faced with life and death questions. Here I'm going to read from Rebecca Solnit's wonderful book, A Paradise Built in Hell. In one passage, she discusses Hurricane Katrina. Here is Solnit. Thousands of people survived Hurricane Katrina because grandsons or aunts or neighbors or complete strangers reached out to those in need all through the Gulf Coast and because an armada of boat owners from the surrounding communities and as far away as Texas went into New Orleans to pull stranded people to safety. Hundreds of people died in the aftermath of Katrina because others, including police and vigilantes, some high government officials, and the media, decided that the people of New Orleans were too dangerous to allow them to evacuate the septic drowned city or rescue them, even from hospitals. Some who attempted to flee were turned back at gunpoint or shot down. Rumors proliferated about mass rapes, mass murders, mayhem that turned out later to be completely untrue. Though the national media and New Orleans police chief believed and perpetuated those rumors during the crucial days when the people were dying on rooftops and elevated highways and in crowded shelters and hospitals in the unbearable heat, without water, food, medicine, or medical attention, those rumors led soldiers and others dispatched as rescuers to regard victims as enemies. Solnit goes on, beliefs matter, though as many people act generally despite their beliefs as the reverse. Katrina was an extreme version of what goes on in many disasters, wherein how you behave depends on whether you think your neighbors or fellow citizens are a greater threat than the havoc wrought by disaster, or a greater good than the property and houses and stores around you. What you believe shapes how you act. How you act results in life and death for yourself or others, as in everyday life, only more so. Katrina was like most disasters, also marked by altruism of young men who took it upon themselves to supply water, diapers, protection to the strangers stranded with them, of people who rescued or sheltered neighbors, of the uncounted hundreds of thousands who set out in boats armed, but also armed with compassion to find those who were stranded in the stagnant waters and bring them to safety. In the wake of an earthquake or bombing or major storm, most people are altruistic, urgently engaged in caring for themselves and those around them, strangers and neighbors as well as friends and loved ones. The image of the selfish, panically or regressive, savage human being in times of disaster has little truth to it. I think I'm going to conclude there. We're going to talk more about Rebecca Solnit's wonderful book, A Paradise Built in Hell, by her. We'll do that another time. In any event, people are compassionate towards refugees. They're compassionate for one another. The kinds of behaviors that we are so immersed in media and other places, of brutality and selfishness, that really isn't human nature. It's the product of the various social conditions that we live in. This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole.